Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Chris Check, our guest. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest. All of us in flannel, because it's the flannel panel. Flannel panel is a thing we do about once a month, where we invite these gentlemen in, and we just talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. You're welcome to call if you'd like to get involved. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. I think we got some ongoing technical difficulties related to the internet, which, because the internet is what I call Satan's playground, I think the fact that we insulted Satan for a half hour in the last hour is related to the internet going down.
I'm glad he's taking it personally.
I know. It makes you feel important, doesn't it? If you want to get involved, you want to call 888-318-7884. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest. The internet being down, is it down all over the entire earth, or is it just in this building? Is the earth has internet still? Okay. Joe Heschmeyer joining us via a phone connection. Hey, Joe.
Hey, how's it going? I'll have you know, I changed into a red flannel over the break, but I cannot prove that now.
You're just saying that.
Oh, man. Joe killed the internet just so he could say that. I got to check with you, Darren, on this, because I was going to start with a story about Notre Dame Cathedral. We can play the audio for these guys? Okay. First of all, I got to get an update because our internet czar came into the studio. Does he say we're going to get internet back or not going to get in? We just don't know. Okay, we still don't know. All right.
6 more weeks of spring.
I don't mind 6 weeks of spring. That's fine. I just can't take any more winter around here. All right, I'll tell you what. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to wait on the audio because I like it so much. I want to save it up for a minute. But so I'm going to go to one of our other stories. And that is the Delaware confession law. Do you know about this, Joe?
I don't know about this.
Oh, really? Delaware.
Did you include this in the email of things to read before the show?
Yes, it was prominently displayed in your preparatory materials, which I don't think you have ever looked at. I don't think you take any.
I think it's a better show without being overprepared. We'll let listeners decide. It's not going to impact my lack of preparation.
I have to say, I agree with you in general that most people do better if you spring it on them spontaneously than if you let them prepare.
I had once a podcast interview with someone who over-prepared so much that the interview went way over, and I was still pretty new at it. This was not for Seamus Popper. This was an earlier podcast I did. And it was like, I don't know how much she thought you could say in an hour, but it was...
But her impression in an actual hour.
As much stuff she wanted to say.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
I know.
I was like, okay, don't do that.
Well, this is one of the things I tell. Like, people will say, like, oh, I'm doing a podcast, and like, you know, because they know I've been doing this radio gig for a while now. We got any ideas? And I'll say, yeah, do it live. And they go, what? And I say, yeah, you don't have to always do it live, but sometimes do it live because you will get into better habits. If you try to pre-record everything and you're not used to this, you'll drive yourself insane because you'll go, oh, I messed up. Let me back up and try that again and do that introduction again. And none of that stuff actually makes your podcast better.
I think if there's one thing everyone knows you stand for, it's lowered expectations.
Now, why did you have to turn it into something mean, Joe? Nice to you, Joe. I'm so nice to you.
I feel like if I can...
I agree with you, though.
I feel like if I can give...
Wait, that I'm nice to you? You agree with me? That Let's get Chris in
no,
here.
No, I'm done. Okay,
No, Chris, you're the president.
I was going to say, I feel like if I can give a review of a movie I haven't seen, Joe can comment on a news story he doesn't know, he didn't prepare for.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, so Joe, I'm going to just give you the gist of it. Is that the word, gist? Give someone the gist of it?
It's how it's spelled.
Okay.
I had a sacraments professor who was from France who said gestures every time instead of gestures. And it was one of my favorite things. I looked forward to it.
See, I do that stuff just to drive like my children crazy or something, mispronounce words. But was this for real? The guy thought the word was gesture?
No, it was for real. He was, you know, it's like his English was otherwise very good, but it was gestures. And it took me, I think, 2 times hearing it before I realized the word he was trying to say.
It was gesture.
Well, both of you guys say schism.
I don't know.
So does America.
Yeah, I.
Well, and there, now I really stand by. Yeah,
and you say schism. You say schism. Yeah. You are the most anti-American American.
I was in the Marines.
He always does that.
I love America.
I know. I know you love America. I know.
I'm not a jingo.
But with a proper love.
I'm a patriot.
Love. Yeah. Okay. Here's the gist of the story.
I love California, Cy.
I do too. I love California.
I really do.
I feel sad for California.
I love California.
Right. Yeah. It would be so good if it worked.
It still kind of works.
Well, all right.
Turn off the TV and California works great.
I am going to pronounce the words correctly in this now. The gist of the story is that the state, the small state of Delaware, Delaware, is lawmakers there have come up with a brilliant innovation, something no one has ever thought of before. Let's make Catholic priests testify against the people who confess to them if what they confess is, and I'm fill in the blank, I don't know, it's I'm sure it has something to do with sexual abuse of children because that's what everybody talks about nowadays. But you know, you should not be allowed to confess to a priest and the state doesn't get to hear about that if you're saying something about, let's say, the sexual abuse of children in the state of Delaware. Delaware.
The first state. Isn't Delaware the first state? What's the nickname for Delaware?
It was like the first to ratify, which I'm not that impressed by it.
Why? I think that's impressive. Give them their, it's Delaware. Come on. They have the lowest
banking laws and
The lowest mean elevation of any state in the union.
I had no idea that was true.
Or they're in competition with Florida for that. Have you ever noticed how flat Florida is? It's weird, but okay.
Florida is the flattest state, I believe, which people don't, everyone thinks Kansas is, but they're not really.
Oh no, Kansas is nothing. Kansas has got nothing on Florida, but you can't tell because the palm trees are so tall. But okay, so the idea is, that's really true. That's science, what I just did there.
As a lawyer and a former
seminarian, please.
This is a horrible idea.
That's what I was looking for.
On every level.
Yeah, okay.
And I'll tell you exactly why. That there are certain categories of communication that are privileged, that are kept from the government, and this is for good reason. One of the reasons is so that you can encourage people to do the right thing. You need people to have outlets. Like, if you can't have a conversation with your priest without it being the same as a conversation with Uncle Sam, you know what's going to happen? People aren't going to go to their priest. They're not going to confess. They're not going to repent. They're not going to, like, this is not good if you actually care about the sexual abuse of children. It's such a short-sighted kind of vision.
Now, I'm interested that you made a practical and not a theological argument.
Can I just say, Joe Heschmeyer did this in the hour before, and I'm so glad he's bringing up all these pagan Aristotelian arguments and everything. Here's the fact.
Lawyer, what do you think? I approached it as a lawyer.
Well, I'm going to approach it as a Christian. So...
Oh, that's going on a T-shirt.
So the sacraments come from God, and the state has no authority whatsoever over the sacraments.
Right. Jesus Christ is a higher authority than the state of Delaware.
In fact, the state of Delaware gets its authority
from Jesus Christ. The king of the universe.
Yes.
That sounds almost insulting to Jesus Christ.
That he delegated some stuff to Delaware?
That he gave authority to Delaware, yeah.
No, I think that there is a public argument that is practical. Like this, first of all, this doesn't work because no one's dumb enough to go confess something if the priest has to report it. Okay, that's a practical argument.
There's never been a single case.
As Catholics, we should make the argument that the state of Delaware is lower on the chain of authority than Jesus Christ. And so the reason you can't do this is you're not the boss of Jesus Christ.
So is the whole country of Australia where they're trying to do this?
Right. Higher than Delaware, but still lower than Jesus Christ.
My objection here is the same one that I had in the previous hour on the Satan Club topic, and it's this. Unfortunately, the reaction from the church immediately goes to the religious liberty question. And one of the ordinaries, God bless him, I don't know who it was, from as soon as this came out, was on EWTN or just simply speaking to the news, saying that this is a violation of religious liberty. It is. I get it. It's a violation of religious liberty. But that is not the first problem with it. It's like the – what's that thing you guys will remember when the government under Obama was going to require that Catholic institutions provide contraception for
– Oh, yeah. Contraceptive mandate.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Very well.
Part of
okay.
The Affordable Care Act.
Yeah. Affordable Care Act. It looks like that's coming down the pike again under the Biden administration.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so there's an excellent piece that came out less than a month ago on catholicculture.com. I'll think in a second who wrote it. And basically said, look, the USCCB just sent me this alert. And I'm glad they did, saying our religious liberty may be threatened again because now Catholic institutions are going to have to pay for contraception. But what he really what he said is the real problem here is that when was the last time a Catholic in the pew heard from a priest behind the pulpit telling him or her, throw out your pills, stop using contraception? That is a vastly bigger problem. It's a vastly bigger problem. So I get that the hierarchy of the church is concerned about this matter as a religious liberty question. Indeed, it is. But the bigger problem here involves the authority of Jesus Christ and the sacraments, the fact that they come from Him, and then simply the lack of practice of confession generally among Catholics.
Right.
Let's get back to confession, Catholics.
Yeah, before you start fussing the state of Delaware, maybe go to confession.
Right.
But let me ask you this then, because I would like, but I think this might be perverse on my part, so I want to ask you both if this seems perverse to you. I would like it if the bishop that's involved in whatever bishop of whatever jurisdiction in Delaware would say to the legislature of the state of Delaware, we can't comply with this because your authority is lower than the authority of Jesus Christ, and we're going to obey Jesus Christ. We're not going to obey you. Or should they say, this is a violation of the principle of religious liberty, and you, under the American Constitution and under the spirit of religious liberty, you don't have the right to do this. I would prefer they say the first, Joe, but is that wrong? Because they do have a duty to just protect the church, and maybe it's wrong to try to protect the church that way.
I think that they should do all three. The thing I didn't like was during the debate over the contraceptive mandate, there was the argument about our first most cherished freedom or first most cherished liberty, meaning religious liberty. And it was like, well, look at the history of the church. And I think you would not say the church's first and most cherished liberty is religious freedom. That is not historically true.
No, that doesn't comport.
It's
right.
Something like, you know, the duty to serve God. It is these pragmatic arguments. I just made one earlier, and I'm fine with them as arguments to appeal to those who don't share our worldview, who are secular. But there is this time and place where you have to say we will serve God and not man. I think that it needs to be one of the loudest things they're hearing. And I think this is an area where the church has been actually very strong. The priest in, I think it was Michigan, who said that he would – if someone confessed, he would turn it over to the state. He was immediately stripped of his faculties to hear confession.
And that was brilliant. Very well done. Because was that Michigan? Is that where that was?
I thought it was. I thought it was Michigan. Milwaukee or Wisconsin.
Oh, maybe it was Milwaukee. That makes sense.
Yeah, because he actually wrote an article in a New Jersey paper supporting this. Yeah. No, it would be very easy for the USCCB to just issue a one-sentence statement that says any state legislature that passes any kind of law resembling this, none of our priests are going to follow this. We're not going to do it.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, all you're going to get is imprisoned priests.
Yep.
And if that's what you're looking for— Great.
But you won't, I'll tell you what, Joe.
It's not going to actually protect children.
You won't end up with imprisoned priests either. Here's how they will handle it. They'll tell their priests, you may not hear confessions except behind a screen in which you cannot see the confessee. And then
now you're going to make Chris like this bill.
Yeah.
No priest will ever know the identity of who confessed to them. And so they won't ever have to report it. So, and then what? Then the state's going to say, no, you have to do face-to-face confession. Well, this will become, there's no way that this can work on a practical level. But I don't think we should make the practical argument as much as we should make the theological argument. You don't have the authority to do this, so we're not listening to you. We'll be right back
the,
with
more. The thing with the practical argument, this.
I tried to get the last word. Oh, no, go ahead. You get the last word. And then you go to the break.
The thing with the practical argument is, in other areas, they're expanding privilege. So therapists, the legal protection of therapists are getting progressively stronger because they want people who do bad things to get therapy because it's good for them.
Right.
And so what you have here is the government just saying, we care about your psychological health, we don't care about your spiritual health. And we want you to go to a therapist, we don't want you to go to a priest.
Which
and
is probably
that
true.
Should be recognized and called out.
Right back after this with more Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features daily Mass, prayers, articles, and meditations in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church. On the web at Magnificat.com.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
I really can't get enough Catholic teaching now that I'm back. I've been back about 8-9 years. It was due in part to Catholic radio, television, and learned so much.
I get most of my news from EWTN. EWTN is just wonderful. I especially love the Sunday Masses.
Both you guys were a magnificent resource in my journey to come into full communion with the Catholic Church, and thank you very much for being there.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, talking about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective with the Flannel Panel. That is Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers, and Joe Heschmeyer, apologist at Catholic Answers. This Flannel Panel, including myself, we will be going to Rome in November. We'd love it if you'd come with us. Check out CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com to find out about the Flannel Panel pilgrimage to Rome with just 50 guests. We're all going to go. We got to fit it so that we can all do it together.
Somebody said to me, why are you going to Rome in November? It's a delightful time.
It's not August. That would be crazy. October is lovely.
It's lovely.
November.
You would visit San Diego in November. The weather's quite similar. The other thing is the crowds are gone. It's a great time to go.
So come with us, CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com. Okay, I'm going to – this next part, the only way to do this properly is to do it as a game. I am going to read you so here's the premise of my little game that I'm going to play with the two of you. The Notre Dame Cathedral, the custodians of secular modernism failed to take care of it, and so it almost burned to the ground 4 years ago. And then they found out that they really like medieval history all of a sudden. So now they gathered up $1 billion in donations, $1 billion in donations, and they're fixing it all up. And so that 4 years have passed, and so you got a lot of reporting on the fourth anniversary and the fact that it's getting all fixed up. I'm going to read you the first paragraph of France 24. They're reporting on it. The first paragraph of the AP. And then I'm going to give you some audio from CNN on the reporting on the reconstruction of this cathedral. It's entirely possible that I am being overly sensitive about this, but there's something I don't like in the reporting. And don't say what you think it is, because I want people at home to be able to play along with us. But if you hear it and you go, I think I know what it is, then chime in. And then I'll let you, after I've done all four of them. Everybody understand how the game
works? So far the rules I've gotten are don't say what it is and then
say what it is, but say, I think I know what it is.
Ah,
do you see what I'm saying? Okay.
I want to commend you for your pronunciation of Notre Dame.
Oh, I so wanted to say, instead of France 24, I so wanted to say Agence France-Presse. Yeah. But thank you, because my Pepe Le Pew is amazing, and I like to use it. Look at Joe. He's in a red flannel. He didn't lie to us. We got our internet back, and there's Joe in his red flannel, frozen, but present. French President, this is from France 24. French President Emmanuel Macron. That's I don't know how to pronounce that in French. Visited the Notre Dame Cathedral on Friday to mark the 4 years since the fire destroyed significant parts of the historic landmark. Now I will read the first paragraph of the Associated Press. French President Emmanuel Macron toured the reconstruction works at Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris on Friday, cheering on workers painstakingly restoring the medieval monument 4 years after it suffered a devastating fire.
I think I see it.
You think you know what the problem is? Okay, play clip number one from the report from CNN, in which the reporter is talking about a photographer who is emotionally chronicling all of this. Clip number one from CNN.
Shock and dismay has turned to confidence that the spire and the cathedral will rise again, and soon, if you believe the general who President Emmanuel Macron put in charge of rebuilding the monument.
And let's do, from the same report from CNN, clip number two. Do you know, Chris, what my problem is with any of this?
I think I'm going with it.
You think you know? Okay, let's play the final clip. Play along at home. What's Bug and Sigh about this reporting on the Cathedral of Notre Dame? Go ahead.
As the monument slowly rose again from the ashes, he emotionally recorded the work inside and outside.
All right, Joe chimed in first. Joe, what do you think is Bug and Sigh about this reporting?
It is not clear anyone covering this knows what actually happens inside Notre Dame.
It's a monument.
It's a monument.
Because it's a landmark or a monument.
Well, monument is right. A French word, right? Monument.
But it's more like...
There you go.
Okay, so
you're making friends with our French listeners, Sai.
The entire CNN report...
Does not mention the word.
Never uses the word church.
Church.
It's not a church. It's a monument
much less
landmark.
Or they could have said Christian monument if they'd wanted something.
But a church is not a monument. Like no. that thing that they built to Emmanuel in the heart of Rome, you know, to King Emmanuel.
That
know?
Is a monument. Yeah,
that's a monument.
The wedding cake. Yeah.
That's not a church. That's a monument. The Washington monument is a monument.
Yeah. It's a Masonic.
Right.
This is a church. So, why don't we just say the word church?
Yeah, the mente in monument is to think of, you know, so it's something that's a reminder. In the old French, it means grave or tomb or what we would now call a monument.
That's the thing.
And
is,
so, yeah,
I don't think that they think that it has any value other than being a memorial.
This is deliberate. This is deliberate. There are memos. There are faxes.
Say church.
Or there used to be faxes. There are emails now. There are talking points. And this is the vocabulary we're going to use. It's not unlike
I agree. I don't think this many different media
failing to use the word church.
The cathedral is a church
on
accident. Yeah. I mean, I would say this. When the Martin Luther King monument, which actually is a monument, was erected, they managed to scrub any reference to Christianity or religion in all of the King quotes, which is actually kind of impressive given how often he mentions God. And so it is a rewriting of those religious portions of history to omit any of the religious stuff.
Right.
And so this is a, you know, if we're going to have to cover Notre Dame, which is beloved by Catholics and non-Catholics alike, Christians and non-Christians alike, let's see if we can do it in such a way that there's no reference to God.
Sai, this reminds me of a National Public Radio clip that we used, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, or maybe, I don't know, 8 months ago or something on abortion. And whatever you do, don't say the word child.
Oh, yeah, no, child.
Don't say the word child.
Yeah. That's
who, by the way, is the central figure in an abortion.
Well, this is what why I wanted to run this by you guys, though, and ask you if you thought that I was being too sensitive, because I can't understand why you won't just say the word church. Like, what kind of maniacs won't just say? Like, this is another line from a completely different place in the AP news report. The reconstruction itself started last year after more than 2 years of work to make the monument stable and secure enough for artisans to start rebuilding it. What kind of a maniac thinks that's better than just saying church?
I think there's an answer to this question. And maybe Joe has a different explanation from mine. It's because we need to be able to talk about and explain, in fact, why, as you said, billions of dollars have come in from public and private sources to rebuild this cathedral.
I think it's
church.
All from private sources. I don't think the government of France.
There is an enthusiasm, a cultural enthusiasm about seeing the thing rebuilt, the church. And so we have to be able to talk about it without acknowledging that anyone may, in fact, have some sense of the transcendent when he or she thinks about this building.
Is that...
So it's just kind of part of France's story, you know? It's part of the history of our cultural story.
But yeah, but
we
it's
can't
not...
mention anything transcendent, much less, by the way, specifically Christian or Jesus or heaven, the Blessed Mother, for whom the church is built.
Right.
And named.
Yes, yes.
That is horrifying pettiness. I'm sorry, but that is horrifying pettiness.
It's deliberate.
If someone, because I can't, like I read it in so many news reports, and these are the major news reports. I'm not going to some fringe, that like CNN, AP, the French press. If you won't say church, you're just, that's petty. There's something just mean, low, and petty about that. And I hope that I'm wrong about it, but.
I do like
and,
how
you know,
they.
To put a positive.
Wait, the music's playing, Joe. Do it on the way when we come back. Right back
with
more after this. Want to get right to the core of Christ's saving message? Want a roadmap for living the life Christ calls you to? It's time to look again at the Beatitudes. In his new book, Heart of the Gospel, How the Beatitudes Show Us God's Plan for Happiness, Father Sebastian Walsh demonstrates compellingly how these eight declarations make up the foundation, the essence, and the final goal of Jesus' teaching. Heart of the Gospel illuminates the scriptural passages from which we get the Beatitudes, explains the significance of their wording, their order, and their timing in Jesus' ministry, and it draws out edifying parallels and connections with salvation history and the lives of the saints. Most importantly, Father Walsh offers wise counsel from his own work as a priest and teacher to help you live the Beatitudes in your own life. Order your copy of Heart of the Gospel today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity in The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Do you have an important prayer need?
We'll pray with you tomorrow on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie.
On most of these EWTN stations. And now back to Catholic Answers Live with Cy Kellett.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guests are Joe Heschmeyer and Chris Check, and all of us together make the flannel panel. And in the first hour, we spent a half of the hour saying bad things about Satan. And then at the end of that hour, our internet completely cut out. So I have no idea how many people are able to listen to us at the moment. We're glad you're here. If you are.
I'll immediately be able to connect those two dots themselves.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not hard to connect, do you think, Joe? But what we do on the flannel panel is we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective, and now comes the part of the show where you guys get to pick what the next story we're going to talk about is. Pope Francis on Disney, Bud Light, which we did mention a little bit before, or Thomas Rees on transubstantiation. Are they too inside baseball?
No, I was going to say they're also, edifying, cheerful.
Yeah, that's
uplifting.
True. Joe, you have a preference?
Well, I was going to actually see if I could add one more thing on Notre Dame and then maybe go to Rees.
Okay, so that's your choice. Is Reese okay with you?
We'll before talk about you say Thomas what Reese? You're going to say about Notre Dame, can I just say I think it's cool how they got a military general to supervise.
I know.
Like they were going to get it done. I mean, I don't even know. This guy was probably an artillery officer. That's why he's really getting it done.
They were going to put an admiral in charge, but they were afraid he would scuttle the fleet. Sorry, apologize for that. It's World War II joke. Joe? I'm not popular.
I was going to say, our friend and former Catholic Answers conference attendee and speaker, Dr. Lawrence Feingold, was in Rome while an agnostic and saw the religious art. And he is a sculptor and a painter, as well as a brilliant philosopher. And so he has this moment where he's looking at The Last Judgment by Michelangelo, and he says, but is it true?
Really?
And this is a pivotal moment in his conversion. Right. And I think it's something worth bearing in mind. There's something really attractive about sacred music, about sacred architecture. And so for people for whom it is, it's just nice music or it's just monuments, there's an important next step that has to happen to say, what is it that led this person to write something beautiful? You know, Foch's Passion of Matthew. Or, you know, any of these great religious, you know, again, music, painting, all this stuff. What is it that leads to this transcendent beauty? And it's something that draws the soul, even for people who can't answer that question. But I think getting people to ask that question and answer it is such an important next step.
That's well said.
Can I follow up on what he said there? A friend of mine was attending a conference in Washington, D.C. last week, and it was about how to be more open with your Catholicism in the workplace. There was a workshop on how to be more open with your Catholicism in the workplace, and one of the panelists proposed wearing.
You're doing a good job of it, by the way.
Yes, you are very Catholic in the workplace.
Put a crucifix on the wall. Now, one of the panelists with straight face proposed, and now I've given away my hand here, wearing socks with
the Blessed Mother.
Or Catholic imagery or saints or something like this, and I actually don't like this, but I think the reason why I don't, and in fact I know the reason why I don't, is because of what Joe just said. So these magnificent works of art that call our mind to the transcendent, as happened in the case of Larry Feingold there, do not function in the same way when they are made banal by being made into T-shirts and socks and tattoos and things of this nature.
I don't know how to respond to that.
I actually agree with you more on socks than tattoos. I think there are truly beautiful tattoos. I've never seen any truly beautiful socks.
Well, socks are silly. I mean, you can wear silly ones. Yeah. I do. It's part of my thing. But they're silly because feet are silly. I mean, you need them.
Yeah, they're not silly when you need them. Okay, I'll buy that. I don't know. I'm still processing that. I don't know. But
The Discalced Carmelites agree with you.
The Discalced Carmelites definitely do. But I was thinking about you went to Lawrence Feingold in Rome, but you know maybe the greatest French poet of the 20th century.
Charles Péguy.
No.
Great choice.
No, it is. It's Charles Péguy. Did you say French poet?
Yes.
Of the 20th century?
Yeah.
Oh, Charles Péguy.
Now you've ruined my... Never mind. Moving on.
Wait. Who are you going to say?
It doesn't matter now. It doesn't matter. I wanted to make this other point. Notre Dame is 850 years old. Countless souls saved, transformed, transfixed, and raised up by this great cathedral. And now it's going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of euros to rebuild it. And a lot of people will say, well, why don't we just give that money to the poor? Well, first of all, the poor make great use of and have always made great use of, except when the French Revolution took it over, the Cathedral of Notre Dame. But I just want to tell you about Bernard Arnault, the richest man in the world. He gave 300 million euros for this. He's worth almost $300 billion. So no one goes around complaining, or very few people, that Bernard Arnault has hundreds and hundreds of times the amount of money that it would take to build Notre Dame Cathedral, rebuild it, and then build a facsimile of it in the desert. You know, like the guy could do it. But they will fuss about the $300 billion that he gave, which he will never miss. He will never notice that that left his checking account to build this, rebuild this. And God bless him. I'm not complaining about him.
Quite critically here, if he had not written that check, he's not giving that check to UNICEF. He's not giving that check to the poor guy on the street next to him.
Planned Parenthood.
It would just sit in his bank account and accumulate interest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a rounding error in his wealth is going back to, for another 1,000 years, that cathedral will be there for him. God bless him for it. I'm glad that he had the wealth to do it. I don't know any, I'm not judging him. I'm saying that this complaint we constantly hear about the opulence of Catholic churches, which if you've been to any Catholic churches lately, we've kind of, we're falling down on the opulence.
We're doing our best.
But this church, it matters that it exists in the world, and it's not a sin to spend money on it.
This point with respect to the poor side is especially important, and Father Hugh Barber used to make this point, or continues to make this point all the time. It's actually an insult to the poor when we say things like, well, why isn't this money being spent to feed the poor or build, housing units for the homeless or something like that? Because what it in fact means is that the poor don't need beautiful things. Otherwise, if all the art were sold and enjoyed in the company of, you know, private galleries owned by rich people, the poor would never see beauty.
Right.
They would never see it. Or architectural or artistic beauty, or hear beautiful music, for example, like the organ just down the road from Notre Dame at Saint-Sulpice, which is one of the great organs in the world. So so the church actually does something for the poor in this regard that recognizes the transcendent nature of the human person.
Right, right.
I think you can go to Eastern Europe and see this contrasting vision of the human needs, because you've got places like Tallinn, Estonia, places like Warsaw, where you have an old part of the city that was built when it was Catholic, or in the case of Tallinn, Catholic, Orthodox, Lutheran, it kind of went all over the place. And it's building beautiful stuff for God. And then you've got when the communists come in and say, why are we wasting all this money on God? We can just build, you know, concrete apartments for the poor.
That get uglier as time passes.
Say again.
That get uglier as time passes.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
As the window casings rust and the rust streaks down the side of the concrete. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're just horrible to look at. You know, when you go to take a picture, you try to move in such a way that the apartments don't show up in the shot because they're that much of an eyesore. That's the vision of what the poor need. And it is, like you said, it's insulting to the poor.
I'll tell you what, let's leave it there. The poet I was going to say was Paul Claudel. Because he walked into Notre Dame Cathedral when he was 18 years old as an unbeliever, and he looked up and he said, it's all true. And he said he just knew it. But then when he said, Peggy, I forgot Paul Claudel's name. I couldn't bring it back to my
Look, I like I like Claudel, but he's not as good a poet as Peggy.
And that is the last word on that. Right back with more on the Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards is our show for young adults.
Everybody's talking about encounter. Everybody's talking about that mountaintop experience. What we fail to often talk about is what happens after. What happens beyond that Damascus moment?
Jesus Christ is calling all of us to be missionary disciples, disciples of Jesus who are on mission to bring the kingdom of God here and now on this earth.
Beyond Damascus with Dan Demite and Aaron Richards, Saturday at 8 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. All right, so we were going to talk about Father Thomas Rees, former editor of America Magazine, or maybe publisher, or I'm not sure of the title, but I think he was editor of America Magazine, a Jesuit priest who now has drawn some criticism for saying he doesn't believe in transubstantiation. I have to say this one thing. All right, he does columns now for secular newspapers, which is where this column appeared, Thomas Rees. And I don't want to read him because I don't feel like you should be a columnist in secular newspapers if your last name is Rees and you don't call the column Rees's Pieces.
Yeah.
Like, how did he not think to call it Rees's Pieces? I mean, it's the perfect name.
So Send him an email.
I already start out with a very low level of trust in Father Thomas Rees because he missed that. I knew Joe was going to get it right away.
Yeah.
You know, our friend Jimmy Akin dispatched with this about a month ago.
Did he?
I was going to say, Jimmy did a fantastic piece.
Superb. Superb.
Responding to Thomas Rees on this.
All right, recap it.
Well,
he goes into...
like Paul Claudel. All right. Go on.
touche.
So Thomas Rees's argument, or Father Thomas Rees's argument, he just says, I just don't believe in transubstantiation. And he claims it's just like this Aristotelian thing with prime matter and substantial forms and all this. And Jimmy points out this is actually a serious misunderstanding of even where the doctrine of transubstantiation comes from, that it doesn't rely on an Aristotelian kind of metaphysics, that it doesn't actually, even though we use the language of substance, the church pretty intentionally doesn't use the language of accidents, just says the appearances of bread and wine. You don't have to believe in an Aristotelian physics to believe in this. You just have to believe that what the bread and wine are is what changes. That no longer is bread, it no longer is wine, it now is the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ. But nevertheless, it still looks to the senses like bread and wine. That's all. Like, if you don't believe that, then you actually don't believe
what the church,
teaches about the Eucharist.
Right.
And for that matter, you don't believe what Christ says about the Eucharist, because he says, this is my body, this is my blood. It's not articulating a particular theory of how the change works. It's literally just saying, what kind of change are we talking about? We're not saying a change in appearance.
Yeah, so what does Rees say he believes, Cy?
He believes in, I mean, I think what he's kind of doing is, I have to say, I don't know. That's where I should start. But from what I remember of the article, he's trying to go back to a purer, more innocent, less technical view of the Eucharist. I don't think transubstantiation is particularly technical. It doesn't, I mean, anybody can understand it the way Joe just explained it. The substance of the thing is not what it looks like. That's not that technical. But he seems to feel that the language is so technical, we should have a more primordial language. We should go back to the language before all of that Greek. But that's, I must say Jimmy handled it. You're right. The way he handled it is
so
very
it wasn't
convincing.
Clear to me from Rees's article whether he believes or not in the real presence. And I think that he is.
He says he does. He says he does. Okay. I don't know what real he says, I believe in the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist. And so he says that explicitly. What he means by the real presence
right.
is now unclear, because the way we distinguish what a Catholic believes by that compared to, say, what a Lutheran believes is by the distinction of the term transubstantiation. So once you say, oh, I don't like this term and it doesn't really capture my belief, well, then what mode of presence do you believe in?
I think the faithful are really done a disservice by priests like Father Thomas Rees, who write things of this order. And I wonder if there is a parallel with the decision made by Cardinal Supich in Chicago, where the...
he put his own archdiocese under interdict?
Yeah. Well, that's what it sounds like. Where the Eucharistic processions that will be coming through Chicago as part of the Eucharistic revival next year may not have the Blessed Sacrament exposed in a monstrance. So as
while proceeding
right. through the streets of Chicago. So every other city in America that is going to, and Joe, you probably know better than I, but if I'm not mistaken, there are four processions that are coming from different parts of the country and maybe Canada as well. And
I don't know about Canada. It's a good question.
Okay.
I don't know about
all right.
Canada.
So, and they're all going to converge in Indianapolis. Is it spring of 24 or something?
I know it must be the fall because I think it's in the summer that the processions are happening.
Oh, okay. But as they come through Chicago, the Blessed Sacrament may not be exposed. And Colonel Supich wrote a involved and unclear defense of his decision that. The Eucharistic pieties, such as processions and adoration, he thinks distract from a sense of the Eucharist, of the fullness of the communion of the faithful. And I don't know what this means, but I wonder if this isn't akin to what Father Thomas Rees is talking about as well.
I wonder.
Both are very, very troubling doctrinally.
Well, but in fairness to Cardinal Supich, like if you said to him, "Do you believe in transubstantiation?" I don't know, but he certainly seems to be.
One of his seminarians who asked if he was an atheist.
Oh, really? Asked him if he was an atheist.
It was people who knew him well were troubled by what his own level of faith was. I say that. Yeah. I don't know that even very close to him, it's totally clear what his religious beliefs are.
That to me is the problem. I don't fault bishops for being out of step with other bishops. I think sometimes that's a good, healthy sign, not a bad sign. But I don't understand the explanation. I do think you have an obligation, unless you're purely a clericalist who says, I said it, therefore it is, you know. Which I think in your profession is called ipse dixit. I think you have an obligation to explain it in a way that people can understand, because I don't know that anyone understands what he's saying.
If I were to play devil's advocate here, I think the argument would be something like the Eucharist is meant to be received in the act of communion.
Okay.
And not just set apart and adored. Because this is certainly the argument the Lutherans make. And it just seems like there's a certain segment of the church that just says the Protestants are right. We shouldn't have adoration, because you'll find the same Lutherans who say Christ is in with and under the bread and wine only believe he's present in that way during the liturgy and for purposes of communion. So they wouldn't have anything like bringing communion to the sick. They wouldn't have anything like adoration outside of the liturgy. They would just believe in some mode of presence during the liturgical celebration. And this is not something the church believes. This is something the church says, no, there's an entire feast, the Feast of Corpus Christi, that has religious processions, that encourages this sense that Christ's presence on earth needs to be celebrated in Mass and out of Mass.
And so are you saying that some of the opposition to this kind of thing might be that it's too old fashioned?
The opposition is that it is, they would say, an abuse and an accretion, this man-made tradition to adore outside of Mass, that what Christ establishes is a liturgical celebration, which we receive his body and blood.
Actually,
at the Last Supper say, keep one of these hosts in a monstrance over here so I can be with you during Triduum.
Yeah, but there's lots of good things that Christ didn't explicitly say, do this. I mean, we don't have a religion where we only do explicitly what he said. I mean, we can.
Yeah. Again, this is not my view at all. I reject this view. This is my best guess to what would lead someone to this bizarre position. I mean, Cardinal Supich is also the one who forbade his seminarians from participating in 40 Days for Life. I mean, these are the easiest decisions as a bishop. Can my priest be publicly pro-life? Can my priest encourage Eucharistic adoration? And he's getting these ones. It's like getting your name wrong on the test.
Boy, you're coming down hard on the cardinal from Chicago.
I've met him multiple times, and every time I've wanted to say these things to him directly.
All right,
might they say, or might his argument be that this is too much of a novelty? I mean, the Eucharistic adoration, Feast of Corpus Christi, is 14th century, 13th century.
Yeah, but
I think Hildegard of Bingen has a role in getting it going.
And Thomas Aquinas writes the major hymns for it.
Right.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is, like, Christ didn't say go into a confessional to make your confession.
Right.
But that doesn't mean it's a bad development. So, like, the development of Eucharistic adoration isn't the a bad thing because it's not, again, primordial. It wasn't obvious from the first day. That doesn't make it a bad thing.
No, it doesn't. There is a sense of wanting to restore the church to her primitive purity that you see among some, which, again, this is, I think, something you have in common with certain liberal clerics as well as with the Protestant reformers, that there is a well-intentioned desire to return the church to what's viewed as her original purity. But the result of that is trying to undo or undermine these legitimate developments that are actually really good.
Well, it does seem a little bit like a botanist being annoyed at the tree for not being a seed anymore.
Yes, that's a well said.
That was pretty poetic.
Was it? I felt good coming out.
You said it in French.
It felt really good coming out, I got to say. I said it in French. Botaniste. But I want to read you a little bit from a CNN report. I'm going to change directions here for the end. The headline of this report. First of all, let's play a game again. Guess, was CNN happy about this or sad about it? All right, I'll read the headline. You decide before I read any more of it. Was CNN happy or sad about the following? There were 32,000 fewer legal abortions in the U.S. in the 6 months after the Dobbs decision, new analysis suggests. Was CNN happy about this or sad?
Oh, yeah, that's bad news for CNN.
The weird thing about being sad is it's all in that loaded word of legal for legal abortions, as if there were then 32,000 like coat hanger abortions. And it just, there's not going to be any evidence that this was true.
No.
No, the only consequence of this was negative as far as their reporting was concerned. There was nary a mention of the possibility that a child had survived to be born.
32,000 children are alive today.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean 32,000 children were born. It could mean that women avoided certain situations that result in children.
True.
Women or girls did. Yeah. And so, but this is the quote that they chose to run from the Society of Family Planning, which did the research on this. And the quote was this: even a small decline in the number of in the abortion rate will translate into enormous life impacts for those affected. And I thought, well, I agree with that.
Heck yeah.
but who are we talking about when we say those affected?
Yeah, being not dead is a major life impact.
It is. I've noticed that in myself. Being not dead.
It's a very strategic way of keeping the child out of view.
Yeah, you just utterly no mention.
The language of life impacts, you're only looking at the mother or sometimes the mother and father, never at the baby, never, you know, like all of that.
Right.
Yeah, it's devious. It's dark.
Here's a life impact. All of the abortuaries in question made less money.
Oh, yeah. That's also another life impact.
That's a life impact.
Yeah. I have to say, too, though, in the states where abortion is effectively banned, the number of legal abortions is more than the 32,000. That is to say, people left those states and went to other states. Do you see what I'm saying?
But it is not a 100% trade-off.
No,
so it's
not,
right. You know, just to stir up the pot right before we end the show. There is a certain similarity in logic between waiting periods for guns and waiting periods for abortions, which is to say, if you impose minor inconveniences, like you have to drive out of state or you have to wait 72 hours, a ton of data suggests people just won't get the abortion or won't get the gun.
I will happily accept any gun waiting period in exchange for abortion waiting periods.
Exactly.
Absolutely, 100%.
I don't know about that. I have to wait to get my gun? all right, I'll accept
it's just
too.
Like life or death decisions. Should we make them in haste or should we have to think about them for a while?
Or should we be allowed to make them for other people?
The answer is yes. Yes to all three.
Yeah. So a child in the womb doesn't get to make the decision. Do you see what I'm saying? Like in any case, I hope that we get to meet some of these 32,000 children or potentially, it's
Dobbs babies. We'll call them Dobbs babies.
Dobbs babies. That's a new thing to be a Dobbs baby.
Oh, can I get credit for coining that?
Yes. Yeah. And I'm going to have to go back and listen to my clever thing I said about a tree because I don't remember it now. But me and Chris, we each had a clever thing today. Did you have anything clever to say, Joe?
Yeah, Joe.
No,
you've got 12 seconds left.
Everything I've said.
You got what?
I got lambasted for being a lawyer first and a Catholic second or something. It was,
oh, Joe, I'm sorry. One of my favorite. I'm sorry, Joe. It's just part of the show, Joe.
What if people want to join this fun group in Rome in November?
November 9th through the 18th, we will be in Rome, leaving together from New York if you choose that option.
Flights included. This thing's a whale of a deal.
Yeah, flights included. Check it out at CatholicAnswersPilgrimage.com. Joe Heschmeyer, one of my favorite people on earth. Thanks for doing
I'll
the
say
show.
I'll say that as well.
Thanks, guys. I was just trying to solicit audience sympathy, so now you've kind of undermined that by being sorry. Nice. But
Check, one of my favorite bosses.
Oh, yeah.
In
the
world.
There are people here who refer to me as boss.
I call you boss sometimes.
I don't know why.
All right, well, that does it. We'll see you tomorrow. God willing, Catholic Answers Live.